Diane, it's so great to have you here on this seminar. And so we have this wonderful topic of the art and science of commitment. And I've been, as I shared with you earlier, I've been, you know, talking about this for the last couple of teleseminars and really getting into some depth around it. But I also know that you bring a totally different light to this, and I'm sure that you have many, many words of wisdom to share with us. So I'd like to kick off with a question, which is one of the most important questions I think that we ask ourselves, and that is, what are you actually committed to, Diane, in your life?
Me personally, I am committed to my spiritual growth through learning, mainly. I believe that commitment, it's such a huge word, isn't it? And
isn't
to
it?
Be committed to your own journey is, I believe, the number one thing that you can do for yourself and for everyone in your life. And, you know, I read a really beautiful piece on commitment, and it says, commitment causes completion. And a commitment is something that you make to yourself that sometimes involves another person. And if you break the commitment, you are ultimately being untrue to yourself. They will get over it, but you will never be the same. And so from the time I was a child, I have been committed to healing my life and making a difference in the world.
And that's a beautiful piece, isn't it? That sense of, if we break a commitment, it lives with us, but if someone else breaks a commitment, we get over it.
And
we can move on. It's very, very true. And I think that that being devoted and committed to a spiritual path in this day and age is one of the most important tasks that we undertake. Like, if we don't do that, then we end up being all at sea and being pulled this way and that way by things like the swine flu and all sorts of things, which are just, you know, like, hello, isn't it obvious? You know, they just wanted to get the shares up in the pharmaceutical company. Hello. And so
and
coming back to that deep...
They had a few stocks of it.
Oh, yes, exactly.
But it's interesting, though, that word commitment means different things, obviously, to different people. And
correct.
If we look at our spiritual journey, you know, for some people, their commitment to their spiritual journey is to, you know, read a book. If you knew how many people say to me, I already know that. I've read it. And there's such a difference between reading it and knowing it in, you know, in the cells of your body so that you're living it. And you and I both know that story that is, you know, results are your guru. What's your life like? It's like if you've still got challenges in your life, then you've still got a life that you need to commit to, and it needs to be your own. And you need to know that, you know, an old rebirthing saying, love is the master healer, and we have to learn to love ourselves, and we have to stay on that spiritual journey, and we have to do the work. We can't, you know, people go to the gym and they exercise their, you know, thighs, or they want to get a six pack or something like that, but the muscles of the heart don't get exercised all that much. And I think when you learn how to love yourself and you walk the spiritual path of loving yourself and being committed to your spiritual journey, whatever that is for you, and let's face it, there's a plethora of things out there at the moment. You know, you can choose to go the Native American Indian way, you can go the health way, you can go, you know, there's a million therapies out there, most of which I've done, that you can choose.
Yep.
But it's like,
that's right.
Are you committed to it? What does that mean? You know, people say to me, oh, I can't afford to do a seminar. It's like, but they can afford to. One of my classic remembrances was a guy who told me that he couldn't afford to do one of the first seminars that I brought here, Money and You, which you and I, you know, basically knew well. And he said, oh, I can't afford it. I haven't got any money. And then I found out he was taking flying lessons. So commitment to me also means where's your priority? You know, I know people who, in the days when I did not have a mobile phone because they were so expensive, people were on a mobile phone, smoking, you know, with an iPod in their ear. I didn't have any of those things, but, you know, I've spent much of my life in my very early days going without eating in order to be able to do seminars.
Correct.
Because it was my priority.
In other words, we sacrifice certain things because we realise there's something of a higher value. So what I'm hearing is it's like different people have different things that they value, and then that's what they commit to. And if we look at values in relationship to commitment, it's that sense of if I'm spending a lot of time doing a specific thing, like your example of someone learning to fly, then that's evidently what I value, and therefore, and I've made a commitment to it. And because I've made a commitment there, then there are going to be other areas of my life which won't get as much time or as much space or as much energy or as much money flowing into it because of the other commitment that I've made. And I think it's also about priorities, therefore. You know, like where are our priorities, as you said earlier? And is the priority, like, what are we going to take to the grave with us?
Exactly. Are you going to take your consciousness or, I mean, let's face it, as far as flying goes, if I can be facetious, you know, when you leave here, you won't need your wings because you know, when you leave the planet, you won't need a plane to get where you're going.
Exactly.
it's that priority. And what amazes me is people's priorities, you know, and I personally am a fanatic. So I'm the first one to admit that, you know. I'm fanatical about what I put in my mouth. I'm fanatical about, you know, what I do with my life. And someone once said to me, if you had a choice between being with the man of your dreams or having your vision of world peace, you and I both know which one you'd choose. Well, luckily I'm at a place where I've manifested, you know, pretty much both. But if I did have to make a choice, my choice would always be spirit.
Yeah,
and there's
exactly.
Never any doubt about that.
Mm-mm-mm. So, Diane, I'm just going to pause for a moment, and whoever came on just a little minute ago, could you press #6, please, so that we mute you, but we will open the floor in just a moment for questions or shares, okay? And so just on that note, Diane, about just the commitment that we need to, well, that when we make it to the spiritual path, the amount of energy and time that it requires, I'm wondering, you know, as you've just shared, you've committed many hours of your life and days and weeks and months and years and lots of money and lots of your own creative energy into this spiritual path. And I guess the question would then become, well, what are people willing to commit to? And I think quite often the universe is knocking, you know, it's those Mack truck things, you know, we get this little tap that says, okay, you're going to wake up, and then, you know, we kind of go, yeah, yeah, later, later, and then we get a bigger tap, and then finally we get the Mack truck that we suddenly go, well, we can't go down that path anymore, we've got to do something different. And I think the world is getting that. It's not just us as individuals anymore, but the world is evidently having that experience as well right now.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Ruby. Absolutely. And, you know, it's everyone everywhere. And if you look around at what is going on the planet, you know, I mean, like me, you must get hundreds of emails a day. And I get them from all over the place talking about the same thing, talking about love, talking about how can we make a difference. You know, there are some phenomenal organizations out there using that name, Making a Difference, or How to Make a Difference. But it's people who are committed to doing something and then inspiring everyone else. You know, like John Denver says, or said, it's not what you do, it's what you don't do that is equally important. And for me,
correct,
when I see things happening out there in the world, I could choose to ignore it. But unfortunately, I don't have that personality type. When I see something that needs doing, then I put my hand up, or I will go up to people, unfortunately, in a supermarket and explain to them what they're doing to themselves when they drink Diet Coke, and I can't help myself. You know, my son said to me, for goodness sake, Mum, that's called people having a choice. And you know what? I don't care what people do if I believe everyone has a choice, but they have to know the difference. And the thing that, do you remember Robert Kiyosaki once said, go after what you hate, and what I hate.
Hate, yeah, I remember.
I don't care. If you want to go on drinking Diet Coke and doing whatever else that you know is bad for you, but you know it, then I have no problem with that. What I have
correct
a problem with is people who do stuff having no understanding of the consequences. So when I watch TV and I see an ad for some mother giving her child some form of Cocoa Pop as an after-dinner snack, I just get absolutely infuriated, you know? And I think I must write to the company because I'm committed to not just my line of commitment is broad and it encompasses many areas. And I think I can't just say that's okay because for me, it's not okay.
Yeah, it's like the question of being ignorant and therefore the question of the flip side of that, the question of education. So,
absolutely.
And the media is such a powerful educator. So we've got the media in the form of television or radio or whatever, basically brainwashing, even though they call it advertising, but it's actually basically brainwashing and using now, you know, the ads are so powerful. And then something that we may have been committed to or thought we were committed to, you know, 2 minutes ago, then we go, well, you know, like they're doing it. So, you know, well, you know, like what's the harm? There mustn't be any harm in it. And we find ourselves doing things that really, we in our head we know is not going to be of benefit to us, like, you know, like the Cocoa Pops and so on. But in our bodies, the body, you know, and in our mind, which has got a mind of its own, it overcomes that that intellectual knowing. So somehow or other, there has to be that full body experience that people have, which is really, in my book, the real definition of commitment, when we're fully embodying whatever that is that we say we're committed to.
Physically, emotionally, mentally, and
correct.
Mentally.
Exactly.
And, you know,
and then, but that takes a degree of awareness and a degree of taking responsibility, a willingness to let go of a position that's evidently not working, like, or something in our life that evidently isn't working. So that new level of understanding can be reached. And therefore, we, although we may have so seemed to have shifted our commitment, the commitment is to something higher. So I think that
absolutely
gradual, you know,
And it has to be towards that continual growth. I think because we live in a fast society, it's fast food, fast sex, fast everything, you know, anything that you want, you can do it the quick way or you can do it the slow way. And, you know, one of my favourite stories, and I don't know that I remember all of it, but it was a stained glass window story about an old man who was making a stained glass window. And some guy went up to him and he said, oh, that is so beautiful. How long have you been working on it? And he said, oh, my teacher and I have been working on it for over 50 years. And
oh,
he was like
God.
70, and his teacher was in his 90s. And, you know, he said it's still not complete. And yet we think in today's society that we can just go off, do a seminar, and suddenly it's like, oh, yes, I'm fixed. And it's like we peel off layers. We don't seem to have the concept that it's a slow process. And I truly believe it can be more it can be quicker than it is, but the truth is most people wouldn't believe it. If it happened like that, you know, like the snap of a finger, people wouldn't believe that they actually had it in their body. So they need to keep, it's like people who keep repeating the same lessons. They keep getting hit on the head or get run over by a Mack truck several times before they actually go, oh, well, I could really move out of the way of the road, you know. And so, yeah, it's a continual process. It's not something that you just dip your toe in the water and say, healed. Be nice, wouldn't it?
it's kind of, instead of the cross on the forehead, it's the whole full body baptism, you know, by the sounds of it. But the thing, just going back to that, we can't put a toe in the water, and the sense of being, you know, that time element, I can't remember the actual tribe. I'm trying to think of it, but it's one of the tribes in America, you know, the American Indians. And they've started carving out Crazy Horse, and they've committed to it. They reckon it's going to take a couple of generations, not just one generation, but they've committed to it, and it's going to be bigger than all of the faces in Hollywood. Have you heard of it?
Yes, I have, but I don't know much about it other than what you've said, and that commitment.
That's commitment. It's like it's not just one generation, but a commitment to the, you know, the future generations, and a dedication to past generations and what they've brought. And the fact that they're doing it all by hand. I mean, they're doing some blasting, of course, but they said, oh, we can come in and we can do this, and they said, no, we want to do it ourselves. You know, we want to put our energy into it, and the white man doesn't really seem to get that we need to put our energy into it.
How beautiful. Isn't that so true? When, you know, you can go out and buy a beautiful anything, but if you take the time to make it yourself...
I don't know how to make them.
Such a different effect.
Wait a minute. We still haven't got a hash six muting happening, because we can.
Yeah, I can hear that, Ruby. So, and I reckon that could be Liz. So, Liz, hear us. Just push hash six. That will mute you, and then you can partake and hear. And we can't hear any background noise. Also, I can hear someone breathing kind of quite heavily, so I reckon if we all just for a little minute totally focus on, if we haven't already, and if we have, please don't do it because it will unmute you, but for those who haven't and it is something new, if you can push hash six, that will mute you, and that would be great.
Oh, thanks for that, Susan. But at this stage, Diane, since we've had a bit of a pause, shall we open it up to the floor?
Sure, why not? I reckon that's a great idea.
Okie dokie. So anyone who'd like to ask a question, and then now you can press hash six again to unmute yourself. So any questions or shares or comments on what we've been chatting about?
It's Lucy here.
Hi, Lucy.
Just a comment or a question. I'm not sure how it's going to pan out, but I've always had the same feeling that my spiritual growth was more important than finding the love of my life also. And I've always wondered if, you know, there was something wrong with me, that, you know, love is what it's all about. But then again, I guess your spiritual growth is all about love also, isn't it?
Correct.
Beautifully answered.
And you answered your own question.
It's good to know that.
Exactly.
Good to know that you answered your own question. I couldn't agree more. And there's no reason why you can't have both.
That's true. And I'm.
But what I see. Sorry?
I'm very fortunate to have both now, also. It took a while.
Yes.
I think that a lot of people think that they're going to find their spiritual path in a partner. This is people who may not even know that a spiritual path exists.
I like
and
that.
And so they think that that's where it's going to be, and it's that externalization of that inner longing for inner union.
Which you are never going to get from another person until you have it
Correct.
With yourself. And yet we consistently think that we can get it from someone else. And it's a very illogical thought, really. You know, when you consider that, it's like, how in the world do you think that you can possibly ever get it from someone else when you don't even like who you are? You and I both know.
Yeah, exactly.
Once the patterns kick in, then the person isn't the person that they thought they were in the first place, and so you're back to square one, which is, maybe...
So really the commitment then is to find oneself.
Oh, absolutely.
Be oneself.
To be oneself, yeah. To know that who you are is magnificent and wonderful, and you just have to trust that process enough to be able to continue your growth.
You know, Diane, there are many layers to that, though, aren't there? It's that sense of that unlayering process, or, you know, the peeling of the layers of the onion. And the thing is that we can get stuck on a particular layer for some time while we think we're doing something, but we're not. And we're, you know, sort of spinning around the outside of the onion without actually peeling anything, trying to get a grip on something so we can actually peel it off.
Absolutely.
And I think that there are stages in our growth when our commitment falters somewhat, you know, because the external forces can appear too big for us. You know, some things that happen to us in our lives appear like tsunamis, and then we feel at effect as opposed to empowered by them. So sometimes it takes a little while before, you know, we surface again and realize that that was a strengthening process.
And that's exactly why we have to keep going. You know,
Correct.
we can't give up. We have to know that, of course, there's going to be like waves on the ocean, you know. There'll be times when the tide is in and there'll be times when the tide is out. And when the tide's out, nothing that you seem to do moves you anywhere closer to where you want to be. But eventually the moon moves, the tide changes, and hey presto, you're back on your path. But, you know, and that's a whole different thing to believing that you don't need to continue on a path because you're already there. I mean, in all reality, Ruby, I've met just about, well, I can't even tell you how many people I've met on this planet, but, you know, you and I between us have met the majority of those people who are out there, and I honestly don't know anyone who... except the Dalai Lama, who I would consider to be at a place where they can say, well, you know, in reality, I can stop now. And even the Dalai Lama says, I still have things to learn. You know, I still get angry now and then.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is so beautiful.
Exactly. So, exactly. And that's that recognition, isn't it, that the forces are within us that create us and that bring us into this body and take us through our lives, those forces are the ones that we're learning about and learning how to master and channel that particular energy, and then how that force that's within us interacts with other people. And if we don't have that sense of who we are, then how can we possibly interact with the other forces on the planet who also don't know who they are and hope to create a better world?
Well, my darling, I have no idea what the answer to that is, but what I do know is that's where most of the world is, and that's why we have such an enormous divorce rate, and that's why we have wars, because people don't have a clue who they are, and they believe that they are what they have been told that they are. You know, whether it's their religion or their culture or whatever it is. And so for everyone on the planet, it's about how can we all do it differently so that we can see another way. You know, I just read the most amazing article on an incredible woman in Israel and she got together a whole group of people who under normal circumstances would be taught to hate each other. There was no way these women could possibly be together, and yet she brought them together in the way of trying to lose weight. Yeah? And these women came together, first of all, very scared, very timid, you know, but this is someone that I've been taught to hate. And then realizing as time went on that in actual fact, this person is no different to me. She still has the same pain and the same sadness, and she's still dealing with stuff the same as I am. And it was such an inspiring story. It just blew me away. You know, to think
and that's
that
commitment, isn't it, to something, that woman who brought those people together, from her point of view, it was a commitment to something that was greater than the sum of those women together. You know, they each came with their own pain, and she was there to facilitate a deeper and greater understanding and acceptance of the magnificence of each of those particular people involved. And I think there are more and more of those groups, you know, coming through. So on that note then, what do you think it takes to be committed? Like, what do you think it took that woman to be committed? What has it taken you to be committed? What are the qualities?
Passion. I think you have to have passion. You know, for me, passion is a really big number in my life. Like, I'm ruled by a passion for wanting it to be different. And, you know, I think that we need to honour our passion and our dreaming, you know. As a child, I was taught so many times, I was told, oh, you're such a dreamer. That's never going to happen. And I just refuse to give up. So persistence is another really big thing for not giving up on your dreams. It doesn't matter what they are. I mean, we could quote 100 people who've done things in their life that have not worked, from Henry Ford to, you know, the guy who started Macy's to Mr. Honda to the whole lot of them. And they were all told they were stupid and what they were doing would never work. And, you know, when I get told, oh, you're a dreamer, you know, you're never going to see peace on this planet, that just makes me all the more determined. So I'm incredibly tenacious, and I think having a tenacity not to give up on yourself. And the other thing is, you know, I tend not to, I think age has a blessing, Ruby. I really do.
I agree.
The older I get, the less I care about what other people think about what I do. I know that I make a difference through what I do, and I know that if I and people like you and everyone else in the world who's doing what they're doing, if we keep doing it, we will have peace. If we keep empowering women and keep empowering the conscious men on this planet, of whom there are a lot, you know, growing all the time. It's like if we can empower each other to stand strong, to stand up, to fight against, with an open heart against what it is that we perceive as an insane way to live, you know, killing and destroying. I think they're some of the major things in my life. You know, if you were asking me to describe myself, I would have to say I'm incredibly passionate, I'm incredibly committed, you know. Will that do? Yeah. Do you want more?
No, some of the things that you were talking about, and I think in particular about as we get older that we care less what other people think, and we come more into the sense of who we are. And at every age I've thought, yep, I think, you know, this, I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life. And then the next year I think, right, yes, well, last year you thought that, but this year. So it doesn't take long to recognise that there's an evolutionary process going on, and that if we're not evolving, then we're dying. Like, if we're not growing, we're dying. There's nothing in between. So people who are in their comfort zone are not necessarily committed, apart to from their to their comfort. But the comfort zone has a tendency to get very, very uncomfortable, but in a shrinking way as opposed to an expanding way. And if we're going to bring peace, I believe that each of us has got to step outside of our comfort zone and do the thing that really in our hearts we have to do and offer the gift that we have within us to the world. And the world might consist of our local neighbourhood, or it might consist of the local school, or, you know, the next door neighbours, or our family. And the world as we define it doesn't really matter what it is. But it's bringing that sense of who we are and not betraying that. And I think that's what I've certainly been learning in the last couple of years, not to betray that deep part of myself that I've always believed is inviolable, and to begin to offer that out into the world as my gift.
I think that's absolutely beautiful, and I couldn't agree more. And the thing to remember for everyone listening is that every single person has a gift. It's not
correct.
Just the people who run the seminars or write the books or create the movies. The people who look after the animals, the people who pick up rubbish on the street, each person is an incredible gift in their own right. And, you know, that whole thing about understanding that your gifts, our gifts, are all different, and thank God they are. It would be really boring if everyone wanted to be on radio with you, wouldn't it? Or on what you're doing here. You know, it's like, and that thing about betrayal, you know, that beautiful, beautiful, I'm sure you all know it, that beautiful Araya Mountain dreaming. You know, that really wonderful
The invitation.
Poem. The invitation. And that line where she says, it doesn't interest me if the story you are telling me is true. I want to know if you can disappoint another to be true to yourself, if you can bear the accusation of betrayal and not betray your own soul. And that is such a powerful piece, because our soul knows what we need to do. Our soul absolutely guides us and shoves us and tickles us and pushes us. And, you know,
and drags us kicking and screaming.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm probably one of the most resistant people I know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, sometimes you just have to surrender to the knowing that you can't deny what it is you're supposed to do any longer. You just have to get out there and do it. And if you screw up, which is a thing that so many people are afraid of, you know, it's like, be committed to making mistakes, because that is how you learn. Don't be committed to doing it perfectly the first time around, because that's
or
not
even
possible.
The second or third or fifth, in my case,
400.
I mean.
400. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, if I could count on my hands the number of times that I've thought, well, that's it. I know the answer to that now, and, you know, that's it. I'm done. I've learnt that bit, and then suddenly everything changes, and what I knew was completely wrong. You know, I spent a whole ton of time telling people that the reason that that dairy foods were no good, I had this belief that everyone was lactose intolerant, which, you know, I still believe that a lot of people are. But I used to say, you know, soy meal, if it was the last food on the planet. And it's like, if I counted the number of times I've changed my mind. And, you know, these days, luckily, I've got a little more intelligent that I'm not forcing people to, you know, to make those changes themselves. But what I say is what Buddha said, you know, which is go out there and find out for yourself. Don't believe.
I think that's also related to the our following our intuition, you know, who we are inside, and listening to that still small voice within, and being committed to follow what that still small voice is saying. Because I don't know about you, but I can have a thought that says, and I ask myself a question, I get an answer, and I say, no, that can't be right. And I say, isn't there a better answer? Isn't there a better answer? And then, of course, the answer is, yes, there is. If I had a better question, I'd get a better answer. So I've decided to commit myself to asking better questions.
That's a really
And Exactly. So now that brings me to, then what about intuition? You know, how does that fit into commitment, either, you know, either to a cause or to life itself? You know, what's your take on intuition?
Well, I think it's a gift that everyone has that not many people have yet learned to trust. And that if we could just learn that one simple word, trust, if we could trust that what we've been given is right for now and we're going to learn from it regardless. So intuition is one of the greatest gifts that humanity has been given. And yet, as children, of course, we were, most of us, told that it was, you know, don't trust, don't believe that, that's not true. And so we learned to doubt it. And of course, in the whole family scenarios, when we knew something was wrong, and you say, what's going on to your mum? And she says, nothing. And you know something is. So therefore, we learned to distrust ourselves and mistrust the information. So I think it's a very good thing to practice, is trusting that intuition. So when your intuition says turn left and you will get a car park, turn left. You know, don't doubt it. Don't say, oh well, you know, what happens if I turn left and there isn't one? Well, so what? You know, but turn left and find out. Begin to trust all that is there for you. And I think it's one of the greatest gifts that you can have is to know that when you're on track. You know, when I read a book and there's a part of me that says, you need to go meet that person. And, you know, I have thought, oh, well, I need to go meet them because I'm going to learn from them. Not necessarily. I mean, it could be that I'm going to go and meet them and learn that I don't need to learn from them. I've had lots of those experiences.
Yeah, I've had a few of them myself. It's like that sense of for whatever reason, we can think that we don't know enough yet, or that everyone must be better than we are if they're in this field and blah-de-blah. But the truth for all of you, and especially those of you who are listening tonight, or listening to this CD, it's about getting that your gift is essential for this planet to evolve. And that when you follow that and you do it from your heart and you marry that heart with your head so that your alignment with spirit is profound, I think that's when, no matter what the obstacles, we stay the course. We're totally committed.
Absolutely. And then you just keep moving. And you know, there is nothing worse than feeling that stuckness when you're too scared to trust. Should I really do this? Should I really move? What happens if? It's like, how are you going to know if you never do it? Do it.
Mm-mm-mm.
You know, it's
Mm-mm.
like people who say to, I spent the day with my 18-year-old granddaughter today, and, you know, she's deeply distressed because she has no idea what she wants to do when she grows up. And I said to her, God, most of the people I know are in their 50s, don't know what they want to do when they grow up. But it doesn't matter. What you need to do is trust. That if you trust your heart and what brings you passion, follow it and it will take you somewhere else. I mean, if you told me when I was young that I was going to be running seminars, I would have told you were crazy. I was so shy. You know, so it's like, don't doubt yourself, listeners. Do what it is that your heart tells you and just keep trusting and keep following, and you're not always going to get it right. But you know what? I don't know anybody who always gets it right. I know Ruby and I haven't.
No, exactly. But it's an interesting thing. There can also be those steps. So just on that note, and when we first met or before we first met, my life was a mess, as you're aware. And I saw this word rebirthing. I was in Goodwood, actually. They had a shop and they just opened it up and it said rebirthing. I thought, that's what I need. I need a rebirth. So I went in there and I said to the woman there, I need a rebirth. And she said, oh, I can't do it here. I have to come to your place. So she came to my place. She gave me this session and I thought, well, that's a load of crap. And then, I said to my then partner, that was just a waste of time and energy and money and a whole lot of other things. I do not believe that that's rebirthing. You know, if it is rebirthing, I don't want to have anything to do with it. So anyway, then a little while later, I saw your name somewhere, and I rang you up, and it was such an interesting conversation. But anyway, I then went and I had a session, and of course I healed my back, and I had that amazing revelatory experience and blah, blah, blah. But if I hadn't stood firm in knowing something within myself and continued to pursue it, in other words, if I weren't not committed to turning my life around, then I would have just thought, well, this is all a load of hoo-ha. And I think that can happen for people when they first start on their path, that they're tested. And, Sorry, say again?
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so I must have passed the test at least at that stage.
Well, you know, if you ask people, that would be really fascinating to find out, you know, how people actually began, because I had exactly the same thing. I was so desperate to find something to heal my life that felt like I was melting and dissolving, and I saw a sign that said rebirthing, and it was a woman who'd just come over here from America, and I had this session, and I had no idea what it was, but it cost more than my rent, more than the rent I was paying at the time. And I came out of it feeling as though someone had put me in a washing machine, and I thought, I can't believe I paid for that. Is that what it is? But, you know, my commitment was so enormous that I went back again, and mm-mm-mm. I needed to figure out whether or not there was there more? Is there more? And, of course, you know, two rebirths later, I had the answer to one of the biggest questions in my life that I'd asked 1,000 times. So it's that, and that again is that thing, that commitment, that willingness to not go with your first impression necessarily, but to trust that something greater than you is guiding you. And we all have that something greater than us guiding us.
Mm.
And it's whether or not we're willing to actually go with it or whether we are not. And that's the basic essence.
And that takes courage, doesn't it? Because I think that's, for me, the other part of commitment is courage. The willingness to tune into our heart and take the leap. And, okay, if we don't land in Lotus, next cliff, you know, until we learn, you know, we recover from our broken bones or whatever, and then we learn. And I think a lot of people don't have the staying power, which is the persistence that you spoke about earlier, and they tend to give up on themselves, not necessarily on the external world. They tend to make the external world right, as if it's the problem or it's the guide. And what we really need to do, I believe, is make the internal world right.
Yes. Well, the internal world is all you have, isn't it? And so,
correct.
Therefore, we absolutely need to keep working on that and listening to that and making it eventually show us what it is that we're doing. And if you hang around long enough and you do it long enough, it happens. You know?
Mm-mm. Exactly.
I mean, my life is so incredibly different from the way that it was. And I am so grateful. But if I were really to answer it, what I would have to say is I'm grateful to myself for not ever giving up on myself. You know, for realizing that I am worth it. And I'm coming, for the people who are listening, from a perspective of absolute dislike of who I was and everything about myself. There was nothing about myself I liked. So to come from that place to a place where I go, you know what? You're pretty amazing, Diane. You know, that is just such a blessing for me and for my heart. And, you know, I wake up smiling most mornings. And that's pretty wonderful.
Exactly. And then that makes you a gift to all the people around you as well. You know, that because you recognise the gift in you.
And if I can just add, as a little disclaimer here, that doesn't mean that it's always going to be like this. I may wake up tomorrow feeling the way that I felt, you know, a year ago. But what I do know, or 2 years ago, or whatever, 10 years ago, but what I, and what I mean by that is, it's like, it's just a continual evolution. So while right now I'm feeling really happy and grateful and blessed by my life, I know that there will be other things that I still need to learn. And when they come, what I hope and what I pray is that I have the grace and the growth to know how to deal with them. You know, I've recently lost both my parents, and it was, you know, the same as everybody else losing their parents, I would imagine. It was a sad, tough time, and et cetera, et cetera. But just yesterday, I put my mother's ashes on my garden, and there was a lady walking past at the time, because I live on the water, and I said, there you go, Mum, you love pansies. See that pansy? That pansy is just for you. And this woman walked past, and my husband said, I think she knows what the container was that you were holding up. And, you know, I thought, well, maybe she'll feel differently about death. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I guess
that's a great story.
The point of this is that, you know, you can never be too complacent, because you never know what's around the corner, and we never know what the lessons are, and all we can do is hope that we have put enough juice in the tank and put in enough miles and enough hours to carry us through the tough times with ease and grace. Because, you know, I refuse to struggle with my life anymore. You know, I don't want to do that. And to the best of my knowing, I haven't for a very long time. But that doesn't mean that stuff still doesn't happen, because I'm a human being. And so, of course, it doesn't happen. You know, and I hear people who say, oh, this is my last lifetime, you know. I've done it all. I think, God, in God's name, do you know that, you know? How presumptuous. Maybe they do, you know. Maybe it's me that just doesn't get that. But I just go, wow, that's amazing to think that. You know, I was thinking last week, if I knew everything that there is for me to know today, I think I would be really sad, because the way the world is changing, we are in a place of such incredible opportunity to learn. You know, the stuff that's coming out on this planet, like, I'm really excited. I want to toddle off and do a couple more courses that I've just heard about that sound to me to be amazing. And, you know, people say, but why do you want to do that? And it's not that I'm searching for anything. It's just that I love to learn. I have an incredible passion for finding out what's out there. What can I share with other people that's going to bless their life? It's not necessarily that I want to go practice it or, you know, any of that stuff. But I think this is a phenomenal time to be on the planet. So make the most of it, everyone. Do what you can do. It doesn't matter what, you know, what it costs. If you're passionate about it, go study it. Go learn it. Go figure out what you need to do to fulfill your heart's desire. Because once your heart's desire, once your love tank is getting full, you know, you're on the way to feeling incredible peace. And that's a nice thing to feel.
Well, thanks for that, Diane. That was great. And I know that you're having a goddess pretty soon and a tantric thing in Bali as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure.
Because that's another part of your life that you're committed to, right?
It is. It is, absolutely. I mean, for me, I've always had an incredibly high sex drive. That was probably based on the need to know. You probably didn't need to know. But for me... For me, sexuality is something that most people, particularly women, are in complete denial about, because really we don't understand it. You know, we have no way of actually discovering sexually who we are, because for the majority of us, we have not had good role models. And so when I discovered Tantra, for me, it was it was a blessing. And, you know, I know there's tons of people out there who teach Tantra, but for me, the kind of stuff that we do is based on a great a desire to find intimacy. And by intimacy, I don't even mean sexual intimacy, although, of course, that's a big part of it, but just to be able to get close enough to some person that you adore and love, that you're sharing your life with, and you can actually feel that deep, deep, deep connection, and that you can have enough trust with to be able to share your deepest fears and your hopes. And sexually, I think that women probably are underrated, in as much as most of us don't know what we want, and we don't know what's possible, and we've pretty much put up with what's been offered. And I don't say that in a bad way. I just think that women are, because we don't love ourselves, it's very hard to know what we want sexually. So for me, our Tantra is a bit different from most people who teach, because most people who teach, it comes from a purely sexual perspective. And, you know, we only teach couples. We don't teach singles, because I just don't think that that's where you can find intimacy with some strange person that you're going to, you know, be with.
Because there's a deepening, isn't it? There's kind of a layer upon layer upon layer when it's a relationship. And this is a whole other topic, by the way. Maybe we'll get you back and we'll talk about relationships next time. But it's that...
yeah, relationships.
Yeah. Well, it's another thing about commitment, isn't it? But it is that layering that we get when we have been with someone for a long time, where we deepen our understanding and they deepen theirs. And then that into me see, in, you know, actually increases, and the obstacles we reach within that actually require a degree of, well, a major degree of commitment from ourselves to break through those barriers and into the light behind the obstacle.
And that light is who we are. It's just
exactly.
We've had an opportunity to find it. And what I see 99% of the time is people who are so terrified of intimacy that they will actually pick a fight and push their partner away, because the love is so incredibly powerful that they just don't know how to cope with it. That is astonishing to me. So I watch that in a state of, I guess, awe and amazement, and knowing what I know about personal growth and people and how we do what we do. It's not surprising, but it still staggers the mind when you think what we all say we want is this sense of intimacy with another human being. And yet when we're given the opportunity to have it, we actually create a drama to push them away.
Because it's almost like we can't stand the intensity of it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, to have to surrender totally to someone, and it's not surrendering to them. It's actually surrendering to the love within yourself. But people don't get that. They think that they're surrendering to someone else, you know, and if they stay together, like together in themselves, not together with another human being, if they don't share that, then they'll be safe. And of course, you're not safe. What you're doing is you're searching still and looking and trying to find the thing that you could have if you were with this person. So our Tantra is a bit different from everybody else's, and we focus a lot on communication and on being safe. And of course, the lovemaking is a whole different part of it. And Goddess is a two-day workshop designed to empower women to be able to honour their past and release it. So it seems to be a gentle little program, which is actually quite profoundly deep and literally changes lives.
Yes,
and we do the men's
recall.
One as well, which is even tougher, because men often are, you know, men say, well, I don't need to, what do I need to do it for? It's like saying to men, the women say to their men, I want you to come to Tantra. And the men go, why? What's wrong with how we have sex? Well, nothing, darling, but, you know, where do you learn? Where do you learn anything? And my thought is, you want to be a, you know, the best chef in the world, you go study under to the best school of cooking. And so you go, my belief has always been go to someone who knows more than I do. So I love what I do. And that's pretty much all we do besides the Lifeline technique, which is this new thing that I brought over here this year. And maybe another time we can talk about that. But that's probably one of the most profound healing methodologies that I personally have found in 49 years of doing seminars.
Sounds exciting. Well, we'll do that, Diane. Not tonight, but we will do that. But it sounds like the place to go if you want to become a goddess is to you, because you're a goddess. And and so when's the next Goddess Within? When's that happening?
September.
And what dates? Can you remember?
Yes. What a good question. It's the weekend of the Fun Run. I think it's the 20th and the 21st.
Okay, so the 20th? Great. So if people want to contact Diane about that's
yeah,
great.
19th and 20th.
Beautiful.
They can check
19th. And what about the Tantra then?
The Tantra is, only do it twice a year, once in Bali every August and once in Adelaide every January. And the Bali is August the 14th.
August the 14th, super duper, sounds great. Well, we've also got something on too, Diane, and because
wonderful.
I've always been aware, for me, you know, it takes a lot of courage to do this work, and so we're running a six-week workshop starting at the end of July on the 29th, and it's called Courage, Confidence and Charisma. And we're looking at, you know, how to deal with all those critical negative thoughts that we tend to override us at critical times in our lives, or not so critical, but, you know, just kind of form a basis for the way we think and act, and which we quite often find a difficulty in getting a handle on. So we're doing that. It's a lot of fun. And I used to run workshop in the 90s. And someone asked me about something, and I went, oh, well, I think, okay, I've got a great workshop for that. So I've resurrected it and revamped it, and it's doing really well. So,
fantastic.
You know, for those of you who would be interested in that, let us know, or you might have friends. And the same for Diane's Goddess Within and Tantra. Now, when I get a partner, Diane...
More than welcome, darling.
It's on the list. So shall we open up to the floors, to the floor, and see if anyone wants to ask any questions or make any comments? Shall we do that?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So anyone will want to ask a question or make a comment or share something with us? And you'll have to
come
press,
on, you guys, there's people out there who's so shy.
I think we've done them into silence.
We have. All right, well, I've got a question for you.
Great.
Well, actually, it's a... Now, how shall I say it? It's on commitment, right? So my question would be... how does one know when a commitment is finished or complete? How does one know when one has fulfilled a commitment and or, as they see in their eyes, obligation? Ladies, either one?
Whoa, what a great question.
Leslie Hazelwood.
Has gone.
Yes. For me, I think one of the things that indicates to us that our commitment is complete is when both parties, so it depends on, it may depend on, I haven't really thought about this in depth, to tell you the honest truth, so it is a very good question, but it's like when both parties are clear, when both parties have no leftover charge, or there's no leftover business to complete, or there's, you know, it's kind of the bow is tied on the box and the deal is done and dusted. and then it's complete. If then the other person comes back and says something or other, then that could be a new commitment. If we start to bring in new conditions or new parameters, I see that as a new commitment. I don't see it as a part of the old commitment, unless, of course, it was a part of the old commitment. But anything new added into the commitment would mean a new commitment is about to be put in place. And I think that's one of the things with commitment, is often people aren't clear about what is included in the commitment, even marriage or contracts. And that's why we've got so much legalese these days, because we have to cover all the bits and pieces and be really, you know, like particular about the detail and so on. So for me, it's about those, whatever clauses we've put in there. And of course, when it's a partnership or something like that, which is an intimate partnership, then quite often a lot of those conditions are unspoken. And we have not clarified, you know, what they actually are. And I think that's an issue. I don't know whether that answers your question, but that's all that's coming to me. How about you, Diane?
Hi, it's Linda. Hello, it's Linda.
Yeah, oh, hello, Linda. Linda.
Hello. I'd like to make a comment on commitment. For me,
yes.
Commitment means... This is speaking for myself personally. If I have achieved something, whether it be spiritually, emotionally, psychologically or physically, I feel as though I've achieved it, and I have the feeling of success within myself, and that is a completion for me.
Okay, cool.
That's great.
So you're, what you're saying is your barometer is your feeling.
Yes,
around
I feel.
It.
I go by my feelings.
Yeah,
I feel
cool.
as though
great,
if it
great
feels
strategy.
Good for me, it means I'm in tune with my soul.
Yeah.
Because it feels secure, comfortable, and safe.
Yep, gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Nice.
Absolutely.
I think with that question, I can be barking up the wrong tree here, but I think that a lot of times people... have that wonderful, magical word called guilt. And so when they are feeling guilty, it makes it really hard to know whether or not they have, in inverted commas, completed their commitment, because they feel, you know, I can't leave this job or this relationship or this whatever it happens to be because of guilt. So, again, I think it has to come back to understanding where you're actually coming from. Is that a part of what's going on? So if I had a question to ask myself, I would have to say, well, am I feeling guilty over this, or is this what this commitment is to me? Is it somehow connected to some form of guilt? And I don't know why I picked that up just then, but did that make sense? That a lot of people who are afraid of ending commitments do so because they know in their heart the commitment is done for them, and yet they are guilty because they don't want to move on. They think they're going to hurt someone.
Mm-mm-mm.
And when you do make the decision to move on, Diane, I think you can get I had a sense of peace within myself that it was the right thing to do. I had a knowing that it was the right thing to do, and I haven't changed my thinking in that way up to now. So it was a good decision that I did leave my husband, and I haven't regretted it. So for me, the feeling of leaving that was my assurance that I was on the right track.
Yeah, you trusted your gut, which is what we were talking about earlier. So it's that whole thing of being able to trust that the decision that you are making is the safe one for you, and giving up those other negative emotions, such as the guilt. Oh, my God, I shouldn't be doing this.
No.
Yeah?
No, I never had that.
Luckily.
Hi, it's Lucy. It's interesting, yeah, Diane, that you picked up on the negative feelings of, you know, when a commitment's coming to an end. So I've recently just experienced this myself, and for me it was, yeah, definitely about the intuition and the little voice that has been talking to you, that you, because of guilt or, you know, because you didn't want to hurt the person's feeling, you, you know, didn't want to end the commitment. And then, you know, further down the track, the situation became very uncomfortable, and, you know, I should have listened to that voice a lot earlier. But now that I have, now that I ended the commitment, I do feel safe, and I do feel comfortable. So it was, yeah, it was telling me the commitment to, was right time to come to an end. That intuition.
Yeah. Beautiful. And that happens, you know, with so many people, that they stay longer because of guilt when the commitment in their heart of hearts, and we're talking a whole different commitment here, of course, but I knew I was picking up something or another going on out there. So, yeah, it's just that trusting thing. How can I trust that now is the time and that everyone is going to be okay? I mean, one of my biggest lessons in this life has been understanding that people are grown up and they can really look after themselves, and I'm not responsible for the whole world.
True.
Thank God.
Thank God. Only took me 60 odd years to get that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm with you.
Well, you know what? I'd say you're a slacker. I'd say you were a slacker, Diane McCann. If you ruled the world, wouldn't things be better?
No, no. But thank you very much for the nice thought. But I think the
pretty
world
sure they would be, but hey, one day, right?
Well, one day we're going to have very enlightened leaders, and I think we've got a really good one in Barack Obama. At least it started.
Yes.
So there, you know, whether we like him or not is irrelevant, but at least there's, he really is someone who knows how to connect people, and he really knows how to connect with people, and that I think is a good start, as opposed to having, you know, put oneself on a pedestal as if one can do no wrong. So I think you know, we've got someone there who's very committed and committed to making a difference on this planet. And I think one of the best things that's come out of that is he was so committed that he wrote all his, you know, his autobiography and a whole lot of stuff, so no one can dig up any crap on him because he's already told us all about it.
Which is just fantastic, isn't it?
You know, so I think we are entering a different world now, and we're entering a world where if we're feeling guilty then about things, then I think we're more able to use our minds to come to terms with it and connect with our hearts, so that the guilt doesn't have to actually crush us. And I think that's what a lot of personal development is about, actually.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. You know, it's about growing yourself up, you know.
Correct.
And understanding that, you know, you can't change the way the past is, but you can change absolutely how you deal with it. And you do not have to go on, in inverted commas, suffering. You don't have to go on carrying the same story. You can change anything, and you can change it right now.
Katrina McDonald.
Right now.
Has gone.
So is there anyone else who wants to ask a question or share with us?
Yes, I do. Am I allowed to ask Diane's question?
Of course.
Diane, are there any lingams bouncing about at Tantra, or is it all just sort of like quiet and hidden?
You have my absolute word of honour. The only lingam you will see is the one that belongs to your beloved, because you're definitely not seeing Roberts. And there are no lingams bouncing anywhere except, well, maybe in your bedroom, but there definitely aren't in the room.
That's hilarious. Very good question.
It was very funny. What a great way to go.
Yes, but it is a perception that some women could have.
Correct.
I tell you, it's a perception that a lot of people have, because a lot of people who teach Tantra actually do that. And that's why I always say our tantra is very different to most people's, because we truly believe that sex is an incredibly sacred thing. And that's why we don't teach singles, because how can you have intimacy with someone that you've only just met? I mean, what is that, you know? So for me, that absolutely doesn't work. So we don't have any nakedness. We don't have anything except what goes on in your bedroom, in your privacy.
Mm.
Alone?
Yes.
Just checking.
Okay, so any other questions or shares or comments?
Yep, I've got a question. The lady who was checking, what exactly were you checking?
About the...
checking that Robert and Diane weren't going to be in there with me, that's all.
In where?
In my bedroom. With my
Are you going to Tantra?
Never.
Who?
Never,
I shall meet you there. I'm Susan.
Susan, it's Morgan.
Jesus, Morgan, are you going?
With you.
Well, baby, it sounds as though you are now.
We will see.
I'm working on her slowly.
Hey, if you withdraw, it's double the cancellation fee.
She has a
and half of that
there.
Goes to Susan.
Exactly. Thank you, Ruby.
Oh, dear.
Anyway,
I'm just having a lend of you.
I know.
So any other questions or shares?
I've forgotten Morgan's question. I'm sure you did ask one, Morgan, but I think I cut you off. Did I?
No, I got my answer. I just wanted to see if Robert and Diane were actually in there with my husband's bouncing Lingam and me, or if I was just in there by myself.
Good. Were they or not?
No.
They
are not.
Okay.
Oh, okay,
so
cool.
You wanted to know the answer to that for yourself.
I did, and I must have left my body or I got distracted. So thanks, Morgan.
Very good.
Apologies, Diane and Ruby, but hey, let's get back to it.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that we've gone way over time, but that's good.
Half an hour over time, Ruby. And here were you and me wondering whether we'd be able to fill in the time.
Oh, no, I think we did really well. Okie dokie, darlings.
Well,
thank you very much.
Everyone, thank you for coming on board and listening. We hope that you learned something. Please remember that you're precious and that your many gifts are wanted by this planet. Know that you are loved. And thank you, Ruby, so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was great. And I think that all the special gifts that we all bring are going to contribute to making this a peaceful planet eventually. In a little while. A little while not being defined, of course. But it will come. It's coming.